We've been looking forward to this day for some time. And we announced that there was a book called Everything I Needed to Know About Life I Learned in Kindergarten. But Howard said that wasn't quite true, that he had to learn a few more things, and he's been learning a good many things for a good many years. And today he's going to share some of that with us, and we're really grateful. And for this occasion, several people who are here who aren't ordinarily here. And I want to just mention Dr. Slater Newman, who is a colleague of Howard's in the psychology department at NC State. And Alan Crisp is sometimes here. He's a part of the Saturday morning discussion group, so he knows Howard well. And Julia, where are you? I saw a minute ago. She hadn't been here in a while. But anyhow, there you are. So glad you're here. So come in, folks, and we're going to start. Howard, we thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Si. It's nice to be back. Is this registering? Okay. I'm glad we're saving all of these words for posterity. So many of you asked about my well-being, my health, and so on, and I appreciate your concern, and I had many, many good wishes, and they all helped, and it turned out to be a very slow process. But here we are back together again, and I was noting to somebody the nature of these times. I looked at it on my television set late last night after I was looking over some notes, and there on one station was Southern Cal playing the University of California for that championship, that rivalry. And I switched channels, and there was Washington State playing the University of Washington. So I switched another channel, and there was Roger Federer playing, what's his first name, Nadal. Match point, Roger Federer. He didn't win that point, but he won, three, four games later, however long it took, but he won. So I just thought that was kind of an interesting sampling of how life goes on in the United States.
American culture.
And prior to that, of course, Chapel Hill beat NC State, in case some of you hadn't noticed, and Ohio State beat Michigan. So that gets rid of the important things of this time. And when Si asked me to do this, I said I wanted to make this a conversation and not much else, but I'll make some introductory remarks, and then we'll take up some of the topics that are current of the day and see what we think about them. First of all, I wanted to say that, it goes without saying, I'm sure, but I'm going to say it anyway, that anything I say today is what I say. It's nothing else. It's my opinion. It's my views. And I'm the only one who can author those and authorize those views. And I just wanted to make that perfectly clear.
You're not speaking for the church.
Not speaking for anybody, and I don't have any experiences other than my own. And sometimes people get confused about that, I think. So I wanted to next mention that we're going to use a lot of words in this discussion, and we don't always agree on what those words mean. And it seems to me that if we're going to have any kind of a discussion about anything, we have to be sticklers about the meaning of words and make sure that I will try to make as sure as I can when I use a particular word that that's what I mean. And I may ask you, if you ask me a question, well, what do you mean by that? And secondly, I would like to make the point that one of my most favorite responses to questions that come is that I don't know. There are lots and lots of questions that I don't know the answer to. And I think the most revealing and honest and useful response is simply to say, I don't know. And I think it's a perfectly honorable thing to say. So I'm going to be, have a lot of I don't knows, I'm sure, in this discussion. So some of those words, let's just see what some of those words might be, just for example. One word I hear all the time is conservative, for example. They say that the conservative forces in the Republican Party are extremely strong, and it turns out that now in this election we're hearing that the conservative forces in the Democratic Party have become strong. What does conservative mean when they use it like that? One meaning of conservative is to attribute it to in describing businesses. And it's frequently heard that business interests are conservative. But if there are shutdowns of plants in towns in North Carolina, and the people move out and or the people lose their jobs and have to move elsewhere, this is hardly a conservative action. If we bring in workers from Mexico and hire them to run, either to do our crop picking or to run our factories, this is hardly a conservative move. So what do we really mean when we talk about conservative? I don't know. So I never use the word anymore. It seems to me to be useless to attribute or to say that this organization is a conservative organization or that person is a conservative. So that's one, I think, significant word. A second one is faith. We may talk a good deal about faith. I don't know how things are going to come up this session that we're talking about. What do we mean by faith? One word, one meaning for faith is that it is the term given to encompass a series of beliefs so that we say I'm a person of faith, or we have all of the faith communities in Raleigh together doing this. And a third is to say, well, this is something I believe without having the evidence to support that belief. I have faith that this is true, and my faith is precious to me and is an important part of my life.
Archie Bunker said faith is believing something nobody in his right mind would believe.
So we have many different meanings for faith, and they may come up in our discussion. A third one is science. Now, one of the things that we, when we're talking about science, we're talking about the hard science and the laboratory-based sciences, and those sciences where we can define to very precise points our measurements and make very precise predictions as to what is going to happen. Science is also knowledge, and it turns out that one of the principal aspects of this time is the accumulation of knowledge by scientific means. And scientific means, I would argue, include not only those laboratory sciences and the hard sciences, physics, chemistry, and the range our descriptions of the universe, but also the information that we accumulate through history, through our study of institutions. All of those, it seems, are part of science, and that a use I like to see of it is its use more as an indication of knowledge and the way in which knowledge is accumulated. If you'll excuse me, I have to drink quite a bit. My mouth gets very dry. There are many other words, of course. One word which has bothered me frequently recently is believe. And I wonder what I mean when I say I believe something. Does that mean that this governs what I do? That if I believe something, I have complete knowledge that this is correct? Or am I tentative about this? And what does it mean when I say I believe in something? If I say I believe in democracy, does that mean I have faith that democracy is the ultimate in the way in which people organize their lives? I was wondering, what do you people think about those words? Do you have any?
Belief, I think, literally just means to a wish. Some people say, that's just wishful thinking. Well, I always say, so what? What's wrong with wishful thinking?
Well, I heard a man on television the other day say that he was willing and insisted that others do it, in fact, that he was willing to fight for his beliefs. What kind of beliefs are we talking about in that case?
That would be contrary to my beliefs.
That's not the way you would use belief.
No.
Are there any things that you would fight for that might have some other?
I think anybody would fight if their life is in danger. And at some point, probably most people will strike back.
Uh-huh.
If you mean physical.
Also, it depends upon what the defined fight has to be. I'm sure Muhammad Gandhi fought like the Dickens. He was very pacifist, but he wasn't lax in his fighting at all. Fought with the curiosity.
So is it possible to be sincere and supporting of the things that you think are important if you're tentative about whether you believe in them?
Yes, I think so.
Anyway, it seems to me that belief is something that we need to examine very carefully among ourselves and within ourselves to see what it really means when we say things like that. Any other words that might give us trouble?
Faith.
How about secular? What do we mean when we say secular? Anti-religious? Separate from religion? If we live in a secular society, does that mean we live in a society which doesn't have anything to do with religion?
I find a word, sometimes it's helpful to go and look in the dictionary and see what the origins of a word are, like secular. I'm curious.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking, what that would say if you looked in the dictionary to see where the word came from originally.
So that may be meaning you want to use it, but you may want to use it in another sense, too, so long as you...
It's helpful to look at what the origins of a word are. I'm wondering, is that the same as sect, S-E-C-T, S-E-C-T?
I frankly don't know the origins of that word. Anybody else know the origins of that word? Because it's a very important word to us because we live in a secular society, and the idea that religion plays a different role in this kind of society than in some other kind of society is extremely important to us. Anyway, it's a word which frequently comes up, about which we have certain kinds of disagreements. And
can I get back to beliefs?
Yep.
Would you be able or willing to talk about your own life history and what led you to believe what you now believe?
Yes, I have that on my schedule, and. I was sure we were going to get into that somewhere along the line, Ed. And let's talk about that, Ruth.
I'm just wondering about think.
the word think.
You mean, I think this is so rather than I believe that it's so, that makes you feel a little better about it?
That's the question, yeah.
Yeah. It often makes me feel better about it. But I was born. I was born in Buffalo, New York, in 1916, which, as those of you who are good at arithmetic will discover, makes me 90 years old. And I found that people pay attention to you being 90 years old. Whether they pay attention to anything else, I'm not sure. But when you get to be 90, and somewhat the same things happen at 80 and 30 and other times, but at least for me now, 90 seems to be terribly important. And I say this without any taking pride in it or anything else. But when you're in the hospital, of course, your birth date becomes very important. And you're always identified by your birth date. And so one nurse's aide came in to see me when I was in the hospital a couple of days in my most recent stay there. And she looked at me and she said, "Are you 90?" She says, "You're the best looking 90-year-old I ever saw." That cheered me up to no end. But anyway, I was born in Buffalo in 1916. My father was worked for the New York Central Railroad, and he had a reasonably good job. We weren't in any sense poor or deprived of any of the things. We owned our own house, and we were kind of a middle-class family as of those times. My derivation was German, and that was extremely important because in Buffalo at that time, we lived in a German neighborhood, and all the German neighborhood, of course, was fairly intense and contained institutions that were German. We were staunch members of the Lutheran Church, the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church, and it makes a difference if you're a member of the Missouri Synod rather than some other synod, which Kevin Phillips remarked on in some detail when he was describing how the religious right had taken over the Republican Party. It turns out that the Missouri Synod is a significant part of the religious right in the United States. So my origins, in that sense, are religious right. I had two brothers, one older and one younger, who obviously had some influence on the way my life went on. My older brother was 6 years older, so he had less influence on me. My younger brother is 2 years younger, still living, very active. Will probably be playing tennis today or golf, and has been a great help to me, especially over my last few sets of physical problems. He's been a regular visitor to Raleigh and has stayed here for some time. The church I belonged to was a very significant part of my life. Interestingly enough, I went to church school and was indoctrinated in Lutheran faiths and Lutheran ideas. Went to school on Saturdays, and then for 2 years I went to school on Tuesday afternoons and Saturdays, and so on, so as well. Loaded up with Lutheran ideas. We called them young people. Group of young people I was with were mostly from the church, and we had a very active connection with the church. So much of my formative high school youth was spent in church-related and accompanied by people who were also in that sense. You have a question there, Ed, that...
Well, so when Nicene Creed.
Pardon?
When you were in confirmation class, you learned the Nicene Creed.
Learned.
And you believe in the what the Nicene Creed proclaimed.
That's right. And I could still, under duress, I might still be able to recite the Nicene Creed. I don't know. The Father. I've learned a lot of those things. I learned a lot of Bible verses. What is it? The thing was that you had to respond with a Bible verse to some, to explain some particular item. Went to public schools, public high school. Buffalo is a much maligned city these days, and it might be interesting to note that there were some interesting things about the Buffalo I knew. One thing was that in regard to public schools, we had the 8-4 plan. I went to an elementary school which was in a brand new building. It had gymnasiums, one for the boys and one for the girls. We had a fully equipped playground. We had a kindergarten which was well stocked with teachers. All of those things we had in the 1920s, something which many other parts of the country are still trying to get. And from what I hear, Buffalo may be trying to recover because Buffalo has been a city which has been on a downward grade. Another thing of interest to me, at any rate, since there have been some recent comments about him, Richard Hofstadter, the historian, was a classmate of mine. And my other famous classmate was known as Buffalo Bob Smith, who some of you may remember. He was a close friend of mine. He died in North Carolina a few years ago. I went on to college in Buffalo, and I went to the college that was identified then as Buffalo State Teachers College. There was no tradition in my family, and I've often thought about it and tried to figure it out, for urging people to go on to college. And it was only after some pushing and hauling that my brother and I managed to get into Buffalo State Teachers College, where, as you might expect, I was trained to be a teacher. At that time, not only were teachers' jobs rare, we're talking about 1937, but I wasn't terribly eager to become a teacher at that particular moment either. So I went on to Ohio State and got a master's degree, partly in education and partly in social studies, and was intrigued then by a friend from Puerto Rico who talked a few of us to going to Puerto Rico and to teach school in Puerto Rico. So I spent a full year teaching in Puerto Rico, first in a fifth grade where pandemonium reigned when I walked into the classroom not speaking Spanish with a bunch of 10 and 11-year-olds running around the room and otherwise making life difficult for me. I survived that and went on to get a job in high school where I met some of the neatest kids. I can't think of another way of describing them. Some of the neatest kids I've met anywhere where I worked. They were eager to learn English. They wanted extra books assigned to them. I remember we had some time left over from some assigned things to do, and they elected to to study a Shakespearean play to fill up that time. Wonderful kids. From there, I went back to Ohio State, continued on with some graduate work at Ohio State, and did some teaching, And then, of course, the war came, and I was in the Air Force for some 3 years in the war years. I spent some time overseas, and we're now talking about 1945, 46. I worked for the Veterans Administration for a while, and I had a fascinating job with the Veterans Administration because veterans were returning in droves. There was available to them the GI Bill of Rights, which was a very substantial package of benefits, particularly including access to a college education. And I was assigned first to administer tests and carry on interviews and otherwise assess the person's capabilities of going on to continuing careers. And we sat down with these veterans and talked with them about what they might do and how they might take advantage of the benefits and so on. It's a fascinating, very interesting time. And I was located in a downtown section of Buffalo where we managed this. Subsequent to that, I was sent to Puerto Rico for a few months to work with them in the development of their establishment of the their programs for veterans. Discovered that my Spanish wasn't adequate. My understanding of the culture really wasn't adequate for me to be of any real use there. So I returned and worked with specially disabled veterans. So I would travel around the countryside and look up veterans who had been severely disabled in one way or another, mostly who were disabled from a psychological point of view, and would work, try to help out programs for them. It was a fascinating period. At the same time, I carried on my courtship with Judy, whom I met in one of the centers for where the University of Buffalo was carrying on work that I've described in their center. And in 1948, we were married. So that was time to go on to a to further work. So after considerable amount of thought, I ended up at Penn State in a program getting a PhD in psychology. In 1951, I was awarded that degree and went on then to Carnegie Mellon, where I worked in the Graduate School of Industrial Administration for about 5 years. When I was recruited, if that's the right word, offered, otherwise invited to come to North Carolina State to work in the psychology department here, where I worked for quite a long period of time as a department head, as a member of the department. One of the first people we hired after I came is sitting in front of me. Slater Newman, I think it was the second year I was here you came, wasn't it, Slater? Mm-hmm. Which would have made it 1957. So that was an interesting time at NC State because it was a time when NC State was developing, at least that's the way I'm going to put it, developing from a, how shall we put it, more or less regional, limited land-grant college and blossoming out and becoming in the early stages of becoming the large, great university it has become today. And it was fascinating to be a part of that growth and development. The same is true of Raleigh, of course. And this was the time in 1956, 2 years after the Supreme Court decision about school desegregation. And I very early became active in ways I don't even remember now in working in the civil rights movement and promoting the development of the civil rights cause. So I retired in 1981, which is really a shock to me whenever I think of it, because that's 25 years ago. And to have spent so much of one's life in a non-working system often makes me wonder. So, Ed, there's a sketch of my life till now. I should point out that very early in our coming to Raleigh, we became associated in various ways with this church. Judy Moore and I, principally to look after the well-being of our children. How much we thought of that as the religious side of our children may emerge later, I don't know. But anyway, we have always valued our association with this church, have found stimulating people, friendship, connection with the community in ways which otherwise would not have been possible. The early meetings, what was the name of the program, Si?
Institute of Religion.
The early meetings of the Institute of Religion were stimulating and provocative, and I think were absolutely invaluable to the kind of development of civil rights that we eventually have achieved in Raleigh. Ed?
I wonder if I could ask you to think back on what were the most significant events in your life and the most significant people in your life.
I've thought about that frequently, and my life is not colored with great events. I would say my early experience at Ohio State, where I went from a rather limited educational set of resources into a great university and was able to sample a whole lot of things that I otherwise would never have done, and that really kind of opened my eyes to other things. My experience in Puerto Rico obviously introduced me to a whole new culture. A different way of looking at things. It had been my plan at the time to travel around the world and see more of the world through teaching jobs. The war interfered with that. Like every other veteran, my military experience was significant in ways beyond the years I spent with it. The idea of one thing that always impressed me was the kinds of things that were given to very young people to do in the war. I flew on a crew running an airplane where probably the average age was 21 or something of that sort. I've known people who worked in the Navy, who worked on destroyers where the officer complement would be in the low to middle 20s. And we gave responsibilities to very young people in a very significant way, I think. So those are some of the most... My family, of course, has always been at the center of my life, and I have two daughters, one of whom lives in Seattle and one of whom lives in Rochester, New York. They are frequent visitors to us. One of them just was here last weekend. So those are no great intellectual awakenings, Ed, that I am aware of.
I know you don't like the term liberal. I've been slapped down on using that term from you before, but somewhere along the line you picked up some values that most of us would classify as liberal.
Yep.
How did that happen? How did you?
I've often wondered about that side, and I'm proud to have the title of liberal. I think liberal, unlike conservative, really describes the kinds of things that those people are interested in or are promoting. And one aspect of being liberal, of course, is free thought, and the idea that you can think and talk about anything without committing some kind of sin or offending people or otherwise creating problems for people. So I thought would think free thinking is one of those. I'm unsure how to call it. The feeling that everybody the freedom of equality for everyone is an important aspect of liberal, I think, and that all situations in life are open to people, and that as we develop our society, we reduce the differences between people, not only on the basis of race and similar things, but on the basis of the amount of goods they can possess and the degree to which they have access to all of the things that might bring satisfaction, and to the degree to which they have control over their lives. I think those are all characteristics of liberalism, which for me define the way in which I see the world. Go.
In our men's group, the term secular humanist has come up quite a bit. And somebody has indicated that you might consider yourself as a secular humanist. And how do you define that?
Well, that certainly is insofar as one, I think secular humanist and the questions you're raising about it raise questions about religious orientation. And I would say the secular humanist comes close to any idea of religious ideas or secular ideas having to do with areas which other people define as religious, as close as anything else. Sai asked me, I always thought of you as a secular humanist, and I said, well, I don't like to have titles because that means then that you get put in the category, as the title signifies, and there's a limited impression in that case. now, that idea didn't come to me in a flash. It turned out that when I was a teenager, I no longer found what I was being taught and what was being dealt with in the church in which I attended of any interest to me, and it didn't relate to me. So that I fell away from the church, if that's a way of talking about, after having, just a few years after having been confirmed, in a painless, non-controversial fashion. It made my parents unhappy. I didn't announce a rebellion, but they knew very well that I wasn't following along with the family traditions. And That, too, is an aspect of liberalism, I think.
I would like to know what one or two things that you consider that you have passed on or will pass on. To prosperity. What do you consider your gift, your present to the future, your work, or your the things that you most highly think about?
Well, I'll be more specific. To answer one part of that question, one thing I passed on to the world, and it's in particular this world and its development, was Slater Newman.
We're not sure that's a blessing.
and some other people who worked with me and came with me. The thing that I think is central to my functioning is the idea that the most important thing we do as a society is to develop our children, and that the most important social responsibility we have is the development of our offspring, our young people. That is the most important thing we do. Some people argue that the most important function of a society is defense against its enemies. I think that's debate. I would say the most important thing is the development of its young. And to the degree that I've had something to do with that in the various situations that I've had, I think that I would regard as my feeling of my major contribution. Yes, Slater?
I'd like to say that I think that one of Howard's important contributions was the kind of climate he created within the psychology department, and I think maybe it seeped out into the, at least partly, the rest of the college and the university, of open inquiry and doing so in a healthy way, so that our department, I think, is a very congenial place. It's still true after 50 years. One of the main reasons I came to NC State was that because of Howard, and I saw the opportunity to for development and for freedom of thought, which was important to me. And I know that a number of my colleagues felt the same way, and it was realized when we got here, and mainly because of the way in which Howard led.
Well, certainly I tried to do that, and it seems to me that one of the most important characteristics of the university is freedom, and the idea that when you come, you have the responsibility, because you are a prepared person, to exercise that freedom and to carry it on as much as you possibly can. And the university is a great center for that. We continually attract for that kind of freedom, but I think that any community that has a university situated in it is a community which has a great resource, and our being here in the Triangle with three great universities is of undescribable value, and will continue to be so. I think we're going to become one of the really important centers of the country and the world. We are already to some degree. So those are all aspects of liberalism, I think.
I have one friend who's on the faculty, and his comment was, you know, there's some days when I hope I don't run into Howard Miller on the campus, because he'll always have some idea of something I ought to be doing. And I know a good many people who subscribe to that, because he always... And most of the things were good causes. I don't know. All of them, I'd say.
All of them?
Almost all of them.
Better do you find good causes.
Well, those that I agree with.
I'd like to know about how you developed your expertise in music.
Music? I don't have any expertise in music.
Yes, you do.
I think, you know, we haven't talked about...
We got about 10 minutes.
My gosh, all this stuff that I was... I think music is wonderful. And just to illustrate, you're talking about opera, I think. I don't know if you remember the, or ever saw the movie Pretty Lady.
Pretty
it has Richard Gere and... And what's your name?
Julia Roberts.
Yeah, and she's a call girl and gets associated with Richard Gere, and he's educating her. And one scene that struck me was he takes her to the opera. And he said, you've never been to the opera, have you? She said, no. He said, well, I want to warn you. It hits some people like things they'd never experienced before. And you want to be prepared for that. And it hit her like that. And I think that's the way I feel about opera. It really hits you. And there's another word that I wanted to bring up, and that word was spiritual. And I've never really understood very well what spiritual meant. When some people use it, it means they're religious. When other people use it, it means that they're very emotional. Other people, they're committed, and so on. It seems to me that the arts and the music are the spiritual side of our lives, and it's there that we experience the divine. Now, I have already indicated that I don't experience the divine through divinities, since divinities, gods, are not part of my the way in which I look upon life. But certainly music and art and other aesthetic experiences are spiritual in my way of viewing them. And I think it's interesting that the great female opera singers are known as divas, goddesses, in the, a title which I think they deserve.
Do you want to summarize those last few pages?
No. It was interesting. I thought we might talk a lot about politics. And from my point of view, in the nature of, or in human nature, And I would summarize human nature as very simple terms. Human beings are social animals who are machines for learning. And they are animals, of course, in the sense they're part of the biological structure of the universe. They are social in that almost everything they do and we do involves some kind of social interaction, cooperation, teamwork, specialization, where we fit people together because of their specialization, and their lives are a collection here together. The social aspect of human nature is profound, and it seems to me that an understanding of that is a necessary part of making this a better world. And we've just finished working over some political decisions, happily this time, and we're working on managing that on an international scale. And the political side of human existence is extremely important and needs continuing study. And one more point I would like to make, Cy, is that I am very optimistic about the future of the world. I think things are getting better, have been getting better for some time. If we put it in the terms of people having better lives, more opportunities, better health, all of those things have improved to a remarkable degree in my lifetime. I would say two of the most important things that have happened in my lifetime, and not only that, in the lifetime of my children, were first the establishment of women as full persons in this complex, and the second one would be the civil rights movements, which are not confined to the United States, but I think are being lived out throughout the rest of the world. And I think those things just make all kinds of things possible. In addition to that, we are getting so we know more. And the way we humans accomplish things, I mentioned that the third part of my description of human nature, that human beings are social animals and machines for learning, the capability of humans to learn and to acquire knowledge and skills is literally unlimited. And we are only now beginning to really tap those resources because of our developed ideas about how we acquire knowledge. Frequently, wisdom is referred to as knowledge. I would say that wisdom lies more in the ways in which we acquire that knowledge and make it possible for additional knowledge to grow on it is really the nature of wisdom, and that we have a fascinating world before us if we can get over some of our immediate problems. Tom?
Howard, what's your perception of the future of the United States?
You've got about 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Well, I think it's important function is to be a central point for the development of cooperation among other nations to develop this idea of that I was trying to express of developing human beings and of opening up the development of human beings as the fundamental. And I think we're in the ideal position to be doing that which we're kind of wasting away, but maybe we can recover over the next administration.
He's lived 90 years old, and he doesn't understand sin yet. But otherwise, he's pretty wise. Howard, we really want to thank you.
Well, thank you very much.